It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. On this edition, Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is joined by Extension entomologist Donald Lewis to answer your questions about the plants you want to grow or grow better and the insects that befriend and bedevil you, like the mosquito. You'll hear why their population is increasing. Call in with your questions, 1-866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Got him. Just after the news. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander. We're talking plants and insects. It's Horticulture Day, and Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Extension entomologist Donald Lewis are here to answer your questions about the plants and bugs in your life. Call in with your questions at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Hello, Richard and Donald. How are you today?
Good morning.
Good Hello, morning. Hello, Julie. Doing fine.
Oh, good. So, mosquitoes are increasing in population. Is that what we should be thinking about and being aware of as we go into a 4th of July weekend?
Well, it's one of the things you could worry about. There's a lot of things to worry about, but if you're a backyard gardener or if you just even want to enjoy some evening on the patio, the population has noticeably increased, which is perfectly understandable that we start the season with very few mosquitoes, and where it goes from there depends on the weather. And while it was raining heavily all the time, the mosquito population was kept fairly low because it was too much rain. But now that the rains have started to space themselves out a little bit, we've got those impoundments of water that are staying full but not overflowing for the week to 10 days that it takes mosquito larvae to develop in standing water. So the population is increasing. And certainly as I mow my yard and pick Japanese beetles off my climbing azalea and try to pull weeds in the backyard, I've noticed there are more of them, so I assume others are too.
Okay, well, thanks for that. And so keep the repellent handy, I suppose. We'll go to Jim in Cedar Rapids. Jim has a question about a favorite pest of yours, I believe. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, I for several years now have been inundated with earwigs. I've got them in the mailbox. I've got some patio furniture that has tubular legs, and they seem to like to live in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got no clue how to get rid of them other than you just, you know, bleach or something like that.
Oh, bleach is never an insecticide. The only way bleach will control insects is if you are skillful enough to drop the bleach bottle directly on the insects, then it will control them. But this is just one of those, I'm picking on you a little bit, Jim, but it's a very common misconception that somehow bleach will take care of all of our problems. It makes our laundry whiter, and therefore it ought to kill insects too.
Well, I know it works really well on possums.
I think you have to hit them with the bottle too.
Oh,
we're going to save that issue for Jim Pieces.
Animal cruelty here.
Yeah,
okay,
that's right.
not on the possum per se, but where they live.
Okay, so you use it as a repellent.
Exactly.
Earwigs are just exploding around the Midwest, and it's not because of the rainy weather this year. It's because we've had good moisture, we've had moist soils throughout the summer for the last 3 to 5 years. We have not had the summer droughts that are detrimental to the development of these earwigs. For those people who haven't been fortunate enough to see one yet, Jim, hold yours up by the phone so people can see it. Earwigs are about half inch long. They're fairly brown in color. They're long and slender, almost flat. The distinguishing characteristic is there's a large pair of pinchers on the tail end. And when you see them running, sometimes they're holding their pinchers in the air, kind of wiggling when they run. But they are scavengers. They feed mostly on decaying organic matter, which means they love dampness, which is why they are in the tubular legs of your patio furniture. They're in the cracks between the ground and the concrete. They're under the mulch. They're under the leaf litter. They're up under your siding boards where moisture is trapped and where they can stay damp through the day and then come out and wander at night. So we know why there's a lot of them. It's just weather-related. They're harmless. They can't bite. They don't sting. They don't carry diseases. They don't attack the house, its occupants, or its contents. They do not burrow into your ears to lay their eggs, as some superstitions claim. So live and let live would be one way to handle this, because the worst you can say is they are ugly and annoying. And fortunately, being ugly and annoying is not reason for lethality against all of us. For people who have too many of them, judicious use of insecticides, try to spray the cracks and gaps where they hide, hope for drier weather, which will certainly reduce their populations. And then when we finally have a drought someday, it will reduce the earwig population, but then we'll be complaining about something else. So it's just part of the cycles of nature, and especially the weather we've had lately.
Hope that answers
it. Is there kind of a repellent that we could use instead of an insecticide and such?
Nope. They're not repelled by any of the common repellents. Some of the insecticides might keep them away from your door threshold to keep them outside a little better, but sealing that crack and gap so they don't get into the house would be a better choice.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Jim. Good luck with the earwigs. Appreciate the call. Bye-bye. We'll go next to Mark in Des Moines. Mark, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Hello. I was wondering how late I can plant strawberry plants and still get a full crop next June, and also what's the tastiest strawberry in Iowa?
Well, you do have June bears and everbears. As far as planting them, the best time is spring, April, early May. And if you plant June bears next spring, you won't be able to harvest until the following year. If you plant day-neutral or ever-bearing strawberries next spring, you can harvest late in the summer, so you will get some the first year.
Is it too late right now to plant the June bears for next year's harvest?
It's very hard to find them at this time of year, and if you did, the timing as far as July and August can be very hard to get something established. So I think it'd be very, very difficult to do. So I think I would plan for next spring, and you can actually prepare the site this year. It needs to be in full sun. It should receive at least 6 hours of direct sun each day. It should be a nice, well-drained soil, a weed-free soil. And if you can get that site ready for next year, I would do that this year. As far as varieties, that kind of depends. We all have our likes and dislikes. But as far as June bears, there are things like Honey Eye, which is a very good variety. There's All Star, Early Glow, Late Glow. So a number of very good June-bearing varieties.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thanks for calling, Mark. Bye-bye. We'll go next to Jim in Redfield. Jim, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Yeah, Jim? Good morning.
Good morning.
I was calling from Western Dallas County, and I built a house, and I have a really heavy clay soil. It used to be a bean field. And I'd like to know what type of trees I could plant in that type of soil that would thrive the best and provide the most rapid growth.
Well, I would plant things that can tolerate fairly difficult sites. And so I would consider things like honey locust, which is a native tree to Iowa, a bur oak, which is native to Iowa, possibly lindens, crab apples. All those trees can tolerate some very difficult soils. And when you plant the trees, I would suggest digging a hole that's quite wide, about three times the width of the soil ball. And as far as the depth, dig a hole that's slightly less deep than the height of the soil ball, so that when you're done, the top of the soil ball will be a few inches above the surrounding terrain. So in a clay soil, you want to plant a little bit higher than normal.
Okay. Do I need to amend the soil around it any with some peat moss or anything like that to provide drainage?
Actually, that would be counterproductive. If you do that, you tend to create a sink effect. And if you have clay type soil around the area, when it rains heavily, it doesn't sink into the clay soils very well. So where is it going to go? It's going to go into the sink that you've created where the tree is. And then once it gets in there, it really can't leave very well. So it's maybe sitting in water. So you really don't want to do that. You basically plant in the existing soil.
Okay, great. I did have one other question, and it does involve ash trees. I do have a lot of native, I guess the white or green ash that is growing further away from my house. And since we're going to talk about the emerald borer, ash borer, I wanted to know if it would be prudent of me to, if I could move those closer to the house in a single specimen, or is it more apt to have infestation if they're in groupings? Because I'd like to pull them out of the timber and then plant them closer to the house.
I haven't heard that groups are more susceptible than individuals. The one tree in the state of Iowa on the island in the Mississippi River was pretty much isolated by itself, surrounded by silver maple and some other species. The emerald ash borer female must find ash trees in order to fulfill her biological destiny, that is, perpetuate the species. And she's going to find ash trees whether you hide them in a monoculture or hide them in a diversity. I don't think that makes much difference. As far as moving them and planting them, if it's a short-term strategy, that seems like that would make sense. But if you're planning on being at this site for the next 30 to 50 years of your life, I think you might just be setting yourself up for more work when the emerald ash borer finally does find those trees. And of course, there's no way of knowing when that's going to happen. It could be a decade, it could be two decades before the emerald ash borer seeks out the ash trees on the western edge of Dallas County out in your area. So if you know, it's a balancing act, and I can't tell you no, definitely don't move the ash trees, but if you do move them and they do grow and they become these huge 24-inch diameter trunks and then you get the problem, it's going to be a lot more expensive to remove them than it would be to have planted a bur oak in that spot to begin with.
All right.
Well, thanks.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. We're going to be taking a short break here. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. And when we come back, Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran and Extension Entomologist Donald Lewis will be here to answer your questions. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander, and Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran and Extension Entomologist Donald Lewis are here to answer your questions about the plants and insects in your life. The number to call, 1-866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Ellen in Bettendorf. Ellen, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Good morning, Dr. Lewis. I have a question for you regarding ants. The last 2 years, we have had very substantial mounds built by ants in our garden. One we actually measured was 3 feet long and 2 feet wide. I'm just wondering, first of all, why all of a sudden they're finding our garden so attractive, and then number two, we do need to discourage them because what they're doing is building mounds, many of them around the roots of some of the plants that we have.
Right. And if they didn't loosen the soil so much, we would just love the benefit they provide, the aeration, the mixing of the soil profiles. Ants do so many good things for us.
Yes, we would really appreciate that.
Yeah, if they would just sort of scatter it out and not do it so much in one place. But
right.
as you drive around, you'll see ant mounds along the side of the highway that get 2 feet tall and 6 feet in diameter. And I think it's just the quality of your soil, Ellen, that you've got such good soil that the ants have just found a great place to live, and they're going to just go nuts. Then they're doing very well. They're finding enough moisture. They're finding enough food. It's easy digging because of the quality of the soil. And they're just concentrating all their activities in that one small spot. I don't know that our organic insecticides like neem or, I lost the name of the other one I was going to mention, but they tend to not work well against soil insects. Our organic insecticides, rotenone of years gone by, neem is a current one.
Mm-hmm.
They work well on insects where we can treat the insect directly, and that is not going to happen by sprinkling or spraying an insecticide on top of an ant mound. This may be where, to discourage some digging, you may have to switch to a synthetic insecticide like 7 or permethrin, one of our garden insecticides. Stir a little into the soil. I can tell you from my personal experience, you're not going to eradicate the ants. So it's not like we're going to screw up the ecosystem by eliminating ants by treating these ant mounds, because in my home lawn, frequently I have to do the same ant mound 2 or 3 times a year, almost every year, and they keep coming back into the same spots to make these mounds.
So this is still a part of their plan to take over the world, right?
Ants are going to dominate. They already outweigh the rest of the critters in the tropical rainforests. There are more ants by weight than all of the other animals combined, and they're very good at what they do, and they're very persistent, and what I really admire about ants is that even though they're busy all the time digging in your yard, they've got all that digging to do and all those offspring to raise, they still find time to go to a picnic. So you got to love them.
Oh, yes, you do. And by the way, if you haven't read E.O. Wilson's novel called Ant Hill, you might find that interesting. The whole middle of it is basically a lecture on how ants operate in the environment. But I guess I don't appreciate these really huge mounds. The smaller ones are okay. But
right. Well, go at them with a rake and shovel. That would be the other thing, rakes and shovels and tools of destruction to knock them back down and try to scatter them out. But I end up having to use a little insecticide to try to beat back the population to keep the mounds below the height of the grass in the lawn.
Okay.
Thanks, Ellen. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen.
Bye-bye now. We'll go next to John in Iowa City. John, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Yeah, having some issues with pumpkins that I've planted. The stems are growing. It looks healthy, but it refuses to vine outward. And I'm just wondering, what would be the cause of something like that?
Well, I think the weather for the last few weeks has been less than favorable. It's been awfully wet. They like moisture, yes, but not too much. And that may be a factor where it's been so wet, the ground is saturated, basically. That may be affecting root growth and also above ground growth. So hopefully with some warmer weather, some clearer weather, some drier weather, the plants will respond and hopefully start to really grow in the next few weeks.
Okay,
that's my hope.
Great. Quick question about a burning bush. Planted it last fall, did well, turned red in the fall like it was supposed to. This fall, leafed out, but it just never seems to get past that light green stage where I see others that are nice and dark green. This just is starting to look downward. Would that be a rain issue also?
I would think not. Was the plant damaged by rabbits possibly this past winter? They love
that
plant.
No, I did. I checked to see if they had girdled it or anything like that, but no, it looks fine.
Okay, but the foliage is kind of a light color.
Yeah, a real light color, and actually some of them are starting to turn a bit of a red.
Okay. Those are signs of stress. They don't actually identify the problem, but they are signs of stress. There's not much you can probably do. I would just try to give it good care. Later on this summer, if we do have, let's say, a very dry July and August, go ahead and water maybe once a week or so. I wouldn't fertilize at this point. It's a little bit late for fertilization. Check it for insects. See if you see anything like that. But probably not a great deal that you can do at this point.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Thanks for calling, John. Bye-bye. We'll go next to Mark in Fairfield. Mark, what's your question?
Good morning, folks.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah, so good morning, folks. Summer is always a mixed blessing for me. I appreciate that winter is over, but I'm probably the most attractive person for a certain kind of little flying insect. It's not the mosquito. They're little gnat-like things that end up in clouds, and they seem to bite. So I end up with little bites all over me, and it really keeps me from going outside most of the time. What is this thing, and is there any kind of decent repellent for it?
I don't know, and no are the short answers to your questions. The tiny flying gnats, that covers a couple hundred different species of things that are primarily relatives of the mosquito, but not the mosquito. There's a biting gnat that is also referred to as a midge, and midges and gnats are usually a little bigger than what you're describing. Then we have this great all Iowa name called no-see-um. And no-see-ums are biting midges or biting gnats, but no-see-um is the word that Iowans tend to use for something tiny bit me and I don't know what it is. So
yeah.
It's easier to say no-see-um than it is to say something tiny bit me and I don't know what it is. Later,
no, I've heard people refer to something called a black fly.
Black flies are very specific to biting you, usually on the nape of the neck behind your head. They're usually located down next to running water, not standing rivers and not lakes and ponds, but down next to the rivers where the water is moving. Much less of a problem on your side of the state than to the west of you. Black flies or buffalo gnats or turkey gnats are nicknames for the same thing. And then later in the season, we get those little tiny black and white insects called the pirate bugs. But it's way too early for those. We don't see those until September, October, when the corn starts to dry down. So I'm not real sure what's biting you, but it's probably one of these biting gnats or biting midges. And the repellents that we have, like DEET and Percodan, they work well on mosquitoes because mosquitoes are queuing in on particular chemicals that we emit, and we can block their chemical receptors and confuse them. That doesn't work as well with these random biters, ticks and chiggers and gnats and midges and so forth like that. You can try the different repellents, see if one works for you. And, of course, if you ever can capture some of these biting things on scotch tape by just pressing down against them as they're biting you, we'd be glad to look at them under the microscope and give you a better name. But it probably won't be a better answer. It'll just be a more precise bad answer.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, thanks for nothing, I guess.
You're
thanks for calling.
You're completely welcome.
We appreciate it, Mark. We're going to take about a five-minute break here. When we return, Horticulture Day continues with Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron and Extension Entomologist Donald Lewis. They'll be here to take your questions. 1-866-780-9100 or email us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in 5 minutes. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander. Extension horticulturist Richard Geron and extension entomologist Donald Lewis are here to answer your questions about plants and insects. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Joe in Knoxville. Joe, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Hello, guys. Yeah, about 3 weeks ago, I've been invaded by millipedes. I mean, tens of thousands of them.
Ooh.
And I don't know, you know, what caused them and why they came to my property, but I've sprayed them. And in the back of my house, I can scoop shovel them out of there. There's so many of them.
You and a lot of other people have an outbreak of millipedes right now. So it's not you. It's not anything you've done. You are not as unique as you think you are, Joe. The because lots and lots of millipede calls. And I believe it's the weather. We've had, again, it's like the earwig story that we started with. 3 to 5 years of damp weather throughout the summer. We've not had dry spells that would stress the millipedes. So they've been living these happy, go lucky reproductive lives down there under the mulch, under the leaf litter, in the fence rows, the tall grass, the cracks between the concrete and the ground, the gaps in the retaining wall. If you live next to a CRP field or a field or a prairie where you get all of that dead organic matter accumulating on the soil, they talk about having so many millipedes that at night as they migrate out of the field, the road next to the field turns black with the bodies of them coming out.
Yep, we live next to timber, and they come out on the street, and you just walk out at night, and you just crunch them all day.
Yep, and it's a population explosion that's related to the weather. We do not have a good insecticide that will smoke them, as we frequently refer to what happens when we treat insects. Because they're not insects. Millipedes are a class of arthropods all by themselves, so the insecticides that work very well on soft-bodied and small insects do not work well on these hard-shelled millipedes. And the millipedes are hiding in places that are nearly impossible for us to treat, either because they are under things like debris on the ground, or they are in these places that we can't get to, like the timber. And putting the insecticide into those damp locations where the millipedes live means it's not going to work very well.
Does anything eat them?
Not that I can tell. There's a few things that will wrestle with them, but you know, when they die, they coil up in a spiral, and then they just shatter into pieces. It's like they're all shell and no meat.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's much there that is digestible. So I think they're pretty well protected from most of nature's predators, but they're not protected from weather. And dryness would certainly help us out in this particular situation. In the meantime, you use insecticides like 7 or permethrin or bifenthrin in as large a barrier around your property or around your back door as you can bring yourself to spray. And you're probably going to have to repeat it after it rains over the weekend and hope that that barrier slows down the migration toward you. We also know these migrations are temporary, but sometimes they go on for a couple of weeks and then suddenly they stop as suddenly as they started. So not a good answer. And Mark is probably right to say thanks for nothing, because that's about what you got out of this long conversation as well.
No, I'd never seen them like that before, and I didn't know if they turned into something, you know, later in the fall or what the deal was. But,
no, what you see is what you get. These are adults. The ones that are migrating are probably about a year old. These are the adults. These are the old-timers who are having one last fling and wandering out to see the world, or at least see the other side of the road from the timber.
Okay.
Good luck, Joe. Thanks for calling.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye now. We'll go to an email that came in earlier from Christine in Coralville. She has a Japanese maple. The top branches are dead, but the bottom, it has leafed out. Any idea of what's going on there, Richard?
Well, the Japanese maples are kind of marginally hardy here in Iowa. And if it didn't leaf out this spring, I would assume it's winter kill. And so I would just go out there and prune back or prune out those dead limbs and put it back to live tissue. But with Japanese maples, they are susceptible to winter injury, especially here in central Iowa. So when you do plant those, if you plant one, make sure you put it in a nice protected location in the landscape and anticipate that if we have a really cold winter, you may see some winter damage on it.
When you say protected location, do you mean surrounded by other plants?
Well, possibly close to a house. Or some
okay.
building. Not out in the open, an open exposed area, but maybe near a structure, a home or something where it has a certain amount of protection. It might be a little bit warmer near that building.
They do very well in courtyards here on campus.
Okay. We'll go next to Marcy in Mechanicsville. Marcy, welcome to the program.
Hi. I just have a question about the ever-present mosquito. We live in kind of a marshy, you know, Mechanicsville area is a little bit more marshy. It's lower. And so the ground, when we get rains like this, are really wet. And I am having a 4th of July party, and I don't really want to use the bombs or the sprays to kill the population. What do you think of those zappers, the no-mosquito things that they have?
The electric?
Or is there anything else that's effective that's not, you know, a chemical that's going to kill everything else along with it? Because I don't really care about anything else. I just don't want the mosquito.
Right. The when you say mosquito zapper, there's a couple of variations on this theme. The original black light with the little electric grid that draws insects in, and then they go zit, and they explode into a little fragments. Those are worthless against mosquitoes because it does not attract the female mosquito, but it occasionally zaps a male mosquito or two, which may be emotionally satisfying to you, but it doesn't change the population.
Okay.
And that brings us up then to the next generation of zappers, which include maybe black light and carbon dioxide and chemicals, volatile organic chemicals, and vacuums, some sort of a suction device. Those seem to get very mixed reviews, and they're very expensive. They can be up to several hundred dollars for this gadget that sits out there and sucks mosquitoes out of the air. In a heavily populated area, it's probably not going to make much of a difference. I wouldn't recommend those, but I would not also say, don't do it, Marcy. It's going to be a huge experiment, and it's going to be an expensive experiment for you to do it. Setting buckets of citronella candles around, the person who stands next to the candle may appreciate the effect, but the rest of us won't notice. So what does come down to kind of the best thing I think you can do as a hostess is find those little foil packets of repellent and put those in kind of a decorated bowl at the entrance to the garden so that people can pick that up and delicately dab repellent onto themselves with the little towelette kind of repellent, which seems a little more civilized for a highfalutin garden party like you're going to have than to just put around spray cans and have people fog the air and run through it. So.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say it's highfalutin, but but we do have, you know, we got kids and dogs and cats, so not really crazy about the chemicals. There's no organic anything.
Not that works very well. Pyrethrin is an organic spray that gets you a few minutes of mosquito control, and in an hour before the party, you could go through the yard and fog the shrubs, the flowers, the tall grass, do the areas around with a mosquito fog of pyrethrin. That is an organic insecticide. It's fairly expensive, but it is an option. The other thing is, a day ahead of time, a pest control operator could fog your backyard for you so that the insecticide is gone at the time of your party. But you have reduced the population the preceding day. So those are some options to think about.
Okay.
Good
All
luck,
right,
Marcy.
Great. Thank you.
Have a nice party.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll go next to Randy in Powersheet County. Randy, welcome to the program. What's your question for Horticulture Day?
Bye-bye.
Hello?
Go next to Randy in Powersheet
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Randy, are you on?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm on Reagan Hay. I've been doing farmers markets, and I have a lot of people ask me, what's the best kind of cherry trees to plant? I've been selling the Mount Morrissey and another larger cherry.
Yeah, as far as a pie cherry or a tart cherry, we typically recommend for Iowa either North Star or Meteor. Those are both from the University of Minnesota, so they're extremely hardy. They're also dwarf or semi-dwarf, so they don't get as big as some of the common varieties, and they'll also bear quicker than some of the other varieties.
What about black gold?
If you want a sweet cherry, sweet cherries are not nearly as hardy as a tart cherry. So as a group, we typically don't recommend sweet cherries for Iowa. But if you want to try one, If you want to try one, you might look at gold or black gold. Those are newer varieties, I think, from Cornell University in New York. And they're much hardier than the older varieties as far as the sweet cherries. So you could try gold or black gold, kind of as an experiment.
Well, they people seem to really like the cherries, and I'll put a plug in for the Cedar Rapids Market tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Randy.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We'll go next to an email that came in from Jared. He says, my coworker and I have a question regarding our lawns. My lawn is new seeding, which was planted this last spring. It started off growing really well. Over the last couple of weeks, the grass seemed to be thinning out and almost turning brown like it's dying. I mentioned this to a coworker, and she's had the same problem. She seems to think that it could be grubs. I've also noticed that a couple of moles in my lawn, but they are in the backyard where the grass is an old planting. Seems to be doing well. I know that moles are attracted to grubs. My question is, what could be going on with my lawn?
Ooh, too many things to choose from, including establishment failure. The weather has been funny in terms of there's lots of moisture up near the surface, but the turf grass is having trouble growing roots downward. But, my gosh, 30 years of trying to beat back the mythology that grubs are a mole food supply, and people are still asking the question. Moles eat earthworms. It's just that simple. The main mole meal is earthworms. And so you have moles in your lawn because you have good soil and you have earthworms. It's the wrong time of the year for grubs to be there. We are right between generations now that we are into July. The grubs are out of the ground. They are in the beetle stage above ground where they are mating, feeding, getting ready to lay eggs. And that's true of the Japanese beetles and the masked chafer, which is our typical annual white grub in the lawn. So there are no grubs in the soil right now. There are very few. There are very few grubs in the soil right now because we're between generations. And as far as new grass failure, lots of reasons. Aren't there, Richard?
It could be disease, definitely. We've had a rainy period, obviously, and your plant pathogens typically love rainy weather, so it could be a disease problem. If you don't have a good stand by, let's say, late August, early September, I would recommend that you go ahead and overseed the area where you do it again. Actually, late summer is the best time to sow grass seed. So if the stand of grass in late August, early September is not good, I would go ahead and overseed. You can have a lawn care company do that, or you could car aerate the yard and then broadcast your grass seed and then drag the lawn with some type of drag device, like a piece of fencing material, and that would work the seed into the holes in the soil and hopefully get a good stand of grass this fall.
Okay, sounds good. We'll go to Mary and Wellman. Mary, welcome to the program. What's your question for Horticulture Day?
I just wanted to respond to the guy with the gnats.
Oh,
good.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure they're the same gnats I have, of course, but vanilla works really good for me. I've never tried imitation vanilla. Real vanilla really works. I mean, they can be biting me, and I'll smear that all over, and then they just quit.
Vanilla is an interesting one. It works for some people, and I'm glad it works for you, Mary. I wish it were a little more reliable for everybody, but it's an experiment. People should try it, and when that doesn't work, then you just have to put it back in the cupboard and bake more, I guess.
Thanks,
and then can I ask about my cherry tree?
Sure.
Okay, I bought what I thought was a dwarf cherry tree. It's a queen anne, you know, the yellow sweet cherry. But it has grown so tall, I can't even reach the upper half of it on a ladder. So I'm wondering if I cut off the middle stem, would that damage the tree, or would that prevent it getting bigger?
Well, as far as pruning, you could prune it. I would wait and do that in March, early April, before it leaves out. I would not just top the tree, where you just chop out the top.
You wouldn't?
I would not.
Okay.
What I would do is I would take my eyes and go up the stem, and maybe near the top, look for a branch that's more of a side branch and cut it off at that point and leave it at that. That would hopefully prevent future top growth and direct it more outward, possibly.
So you're saying to cut off one of the main side stems?
Well, the actual main trunk near the top, where maybe it has a branch that goes more horizontal. So you're cutting
that's
back the main stem back to this really healthy, sturdy, horizontal branch. And you're hoping now that the growth now goes to that branch rather than a new stem going upward.
I gotcha. Okay, it's going to be a trick getting up there with a chainsaw, but I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
Good luck. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Be careful.
Yeah. Bye-bye, Mary. We'll go next to Joe in Cedar Rapids. Joe, thanks for waiting. What's your question for Richard Geron and Donald Lewis today?
Well, I don't know if it's really in their area of expertise, but one of the earlier callers talked about rabbits, and I had a real funny problem in my backyard. I have some rose bushes that they just seem to love and some lilies that they ate out. I thought they were living underneath my deck where I had a bunch of stuff stored, so I cleared that out, but the bunny family that's been under there hasn't been deterred by that or any repellents that I've used. Do you have any suggestions for trying to evict some bunnies?
Well, as far as preventing damage, the best way of doing that is by fencing. Not the most attractive solution, but it does work. You can use chicken wire fencing, hardware cloth. As far as evicting the rabbits, maybe borrowing a dog from the neighbor.
I have an old dog, and they have no respect for her.
Okay,
that's right. The rabbits don't care.
Well, I don't know, Joe. I guess you have to learn to live together somehow.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. We appreciate it. Bye-bye. We'll go next to Jim in Des Moines. Jim, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Well, I've got a question about some ivy. It's a fine vine that I see growing into some evergreen shrubs. And I'm pretty sure it's a type of poison ivy. It's a nice, frail little vine. It has three leaves, but in totally different positions than what the normal poison ivy looks like. And it has little flowers on it right now, and they're kind of a bright medium purple with little yellow center, little stems in the center that are bright yellow. And if you touch it, you 6 hours later, you will realize you have the little bumps that appear to be poison ivy.
Well, that doesn't appear to be poison ivy because
Well,
I'm thinking it might be some type of bitter nightshade or something of that nature, possibly. As far as the flowers on poison ivy, they tend to be white. They're not purple.
That. Yes, sir.
And if you say they have purple flowers, I kind of think of possibly like a bitter nightshade or something of that type. It does have a flower that can be purple. It does form a berry afterwards.
Yes.
A small little berry that is green.
Yes.
But then it turns either a dark red or kind of a dark purple.
Yes.
And I'm thinking it might be something of that nature related to tomatoes and potatoes in that potato family. And I'm thinking it might be some type of bitter nightshade or something of that type. It's a fairly common weed, and it will climb into things if it has the ability. If there's something there where it can climb into the plant,
right.
It will.
Right.
So I'm thinking that's probably what it is, something of that type, and not poison ivy. As far as the skin irritation, that I don't understand because that should not produce that. Mm-hmm. So that's the only part that, to me, that I don't quite understand.
Okay, well, I've mentioned it to the establishment, but they just avoid my comment.
Oh, dear. Well, stay away from it, Jim.
If you have a digital camera.
Yes.
And if you have internet access.
Yes.
You can take some pictures of the plant, include photos of the leaf, the flowers, the fruit.
Yes.
And you can send those to Iowa State, specifically to Hortline, which is Hort LINE.
Okay.
At IASTATE .edu.
Okay.
And I'm sure someone can identify that.
Well, that would be helpful. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Jim. I hope you feel better, and I hope you stay away from that plant. Sounds like
I will.
That. All right.
And
thanks
thank
for
you.
Calling. We appreciate it. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave Horticulture Day. We're going into another hour pretty soon of something else. A fresh hour is coming up. But thank you so much to Richard Giron and to Donald Lewis today for your expertise. We'll be back next week, another Horticulture Day next Friday. So we hope you tune in again at 10 o'clock. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our assistant producer today is Christopher Mai. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Julie Englander. Thank you for joining us. Thank you.